You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In this podcast, we talk about Borough's Easter weekend, give our prison place picks, look ahead to Swansea, and answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and this is all your Borough Match Day chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the track. Goal!
Ravanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him.
Welcome back to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Tom, Dana and Matt this week. And we're talking about a positive weekend for Borough with a draw at Southampton on Good Friday and a win against Sheffield Wednesday on Easter Monday, leaving Borough 6 unbeaten, our best form since September and October, and now mathematically clear of the dreaded relegation zone. So, guys, can you give me one word to sum up your feelings after the weekend's games? Dan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I'd probably say content, because we're unbeaten in six. We've kept four clean sheets across that run, and we're in a really good period at the moment. I'm not going to attach it to any playoff hopes, because I think the championship is ever-changing and it could age very quickly if I was to say, oh yeah, but can we do it? Which is probably why we're not discussing it in this episode. But I like the fact that we still have that lingering question, because I'd much rather that than Borough's season peter out into nothingness and us be on the beach. So I think it's good that we've got a very unlikely, but still the slight chance that we could get in there. So I'm pretty content. Form's good. We seem to have patched up our defence a little bit in regards to keeping clean sheets and being more defensively solid. So all is pretty well. I'm not going to go overboard on my feeling. I'm just pretty content at the moment.
Just like Borough to give us a little bit of false hope at the end of the season, keep things interesting in this.
Yep.
Matt, how about you? What is your one word to sum up the feelings after the weekend's games?
I'd say it was an excellent weekend.
Ah, boo.
Matt, I will be kicking you from the episode now. So.
You can't talk, Tom. That's exactly what you would have said if you weren't hosting this episode.
Did you just say exactly?
Oh, God's sake. I'm leaving.
Right out the Tom Green playbook right there. But no, I agree with Dana. I'm not getting too excited about playoffs at all. But heading into the final eight games, I wanted two things from Borough. One was for us to absolutely wreck the party of the promotion sides and try and have an external impact on their season and try and maybe, you know, we've already wrecked our own season, we might as well start wrecking everyone else's. So we did that away at Southampton. I thought we'd draw that game. I just think Borough are really good in them sort of games, and I thought we did really well in that game to get a point from it. I wanted us to also show a little bit more of a reassured performance at home, and it should be a lot easier than we make it, but to put aside a team down the bottom at home quite comfortably is something we should be doing a lot more, that we've not done anywhere near enough this season. And I think that's probably what's cost us playoffs, if I'm honest, them sort of games at home. So, yeah, to see us put aside like Sheffield Wednesday to the sword, beat them comfortably, could have been more, should have been more. Clean sheet, another one to add to Super Senny's list of clean sheets of late as well. It's all I can really ask from the team. in recent weeks. And like Dana said, you know, we'll see where it takes us. I'm not getting too excited, but I'm glad there is still something, that the season's still alive in some form. But everything I'm wanting from the club and the team at the minute, they're kind of delivering. So an excellent weekend, an excellent Easter. Yeah.
I'd have to agree with everything that you guys have said, except for the puns. I was trying to stay away from the Easter puns for this week. But I'd agree with that. It makes things interesting in the very least that we've still got something to play for. I'm not thinking about playoffs or getting excited or anything, but, you know, come 5 o'clock on Saturday, if everyone else around us has lost and we beat Swansea, yeah, maybe I'll get a job in London or something ready for the playoff final. But
I thought you were just going to say get a job then.
Like, a job.
Solid plan. We were talking though, off air before we started though, of like the next fixture of the teams in and around us, and Norwich play Ipswich, which I thought was quite interesting, and the Coventry play Leeds, I think. So yeah, it's good that we're kind of side-eyeing the playoffs a little bit, but yeah, we'll see. As we've kind of touched upon, we'll see where it takes us this good run. Hopefully, we can just continue it.
Are you letting Borup get your hopes up, Dana? Don't do it.
Absolutely not. Well, I did that this season when I went for bloody second place prediction in my pre-season and egg on my face.
Coventry will lose, Hull will lose, Norwich will lose, and then we'll lose.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Missed the open goal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Speaking about the run that we're on, though, Good Friday, 1-1 draw at Southampton. Dana, how do you feel about the performance?
You know what? I thought we did well in the end. At half-time, I thought it was quite humorous that it was very typical of both sides individually. Southampton had a lot of the ball. I think there was a period of about 15 minutes where they had 94% possession. And it was a bit of a tough watch because of that, because Borough just tried to contain them and then we just didn't have any of the possession. So it was them really dominating the ball, being patient in their build-up, and then Borough conceding a really, really sloppy, preventable goal from our own mistake. So at half-time, I guess it was the epitome of two separate teams being fused together in one half of a football match. I did also say at half-time that it's only a goal. They're only one goal up. And for all of their possession dominance, that is all they've got to show for it. So it was all, like, the game was always open for Borough to kind of still steal something. And you know what? I thought in the second half, our quality improved just that little bit. It was poor in the first half in that I think we did have the openings, but they never really materialised into chances, bar that Finazar's chance where he struck the foot of the post, because our passing was just really poor. And I think that Lucas Engel was probably the big culprit of that. But it improved just enough in the second half for us to be able to create openings, fashion chances, and ultimately get that goal in the end. And it was a really good header from Emmanuel Attilaf and a really good pick out from Alaire Gilbert as well. But like, there was always scope for Borough to attack Southampton. They had that really high line given their possession dominance. And we had two key players in that game, Latte Lath and Jones, who've, you know, they've both got pace. Although, I said this on the radio afterwards, but Jones getting outpaced by Jack Stevens was quite something. I do have to give Jack Stevens credit because it was really good defending, but I was not expecting him to catch up to Jones in that instance. But that was a counter-attack, and I think that we had the potential to probably attack them a little bit more through that avenue. But yeah, in the end, I think we improved just that little bit more. And given the fact that they had an absolute shedload of chances and didn't take them, that good old cliche of, you know, will they be left to rue those chances? And in the end, they were. And I looked at the Saints FC hashtag after the game. Not one Southampton fan was surprised, because we just built confidence in that game enough to fashion that chance to snatch the game. And yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant to see those scenes at the end as well, because Borough have a lot of fans down south that, you know, massively deserve credit as well, but especially those that travel from Teesside. That's one hell of a journey, and I'm glad that they got something to celebrate in the end.
You mentioned it there about the amount of chances that Southampton had and didn't take. With that in mind, do you think we were a bit fortunate to come away with the draw, or do you think Borough deserved it based on particularly the second half performance?
I think it's a classic bit of bothery. I mean, yeah, Borough gave up two XG against Southampton, which is our third highest this season behind Blackburn away, which we conceded 2.9 XG, and both Leicester away and Coventry at home, which amounted to 2.1 XG against. I mean, how Shea Adams in particular didn't score, I do not know. That chance in particular where Stuart Armstrong has a shot on the edge of the box, I think it is, and it deflects off Matt Clark, who rushes out to block him, and it ends up at the feet of Shea Adams about 8 yards out, and he snatches at it, goes wide, and then he has the audacity to appeal for a corner. It literally does not touch anybody. I think that's how you know he was a bit embarrassed that he didn't score that one, because it was a gilt-edged chance. But yeah, I think the more that happens, I guess, I'd like to know the psychology behind it, but I do think it probably gives a team that's maybe under the cosh a little bit and has kind of rode that wave a little bit more confidence that, you know what, they're missing chances. We could go on and score. We've seen that game so many times. Man United in the Cup, prime example of it. They had chances, didn't take them. We rode our luck and we scored that goal. Probably shouldn't have counted, really, that goal. The handball rule is ridiculous, but we had it nonetheless. So I think, yeah, it was a bit of both. Borough, to their credit, improved just that little bit in that second half. And as I said, that was enough.
I want to put this next question out to you both as kind of like an open floor, and it can be a discussion as well. But what were our favourite moments from the game? Because I think personally, something you've just mentioned there, I don't know if this was the same incident, but it's made me think of it. Matt Clark, slide tackle of his head. It's great defending, the bravery of him, especially, you know, he's come back from an injury that's kept him out for absolute ages, and then he's still putting his head in the way of a potential shot to block a goal. I thought that was great defending from Matt Clark.
You know what? Lucas Engel's slide tackle there has kind of gone under the radar, but I absolutely love it. He crunches into it and manages to put Adam Armstrong off. But yeah, that was my favourite. I'm sure it's probably Matt's as well, right?
Yeah, it was obviously an obvious thing to say, Lat's header, because it was a fantastic header, especially after he'd completely spanned a 1v1 about 10 minutes earlier. It's vintage laugh, but yeah, Matt Clark tackling with his big bald head. Absolutely fantastic. You just love to see it. And I was thinking this at the game at the weekend, I would not have thought at the start of this season, if you were to tell me that Matt Clark would be our only fit centre-back, I would never have believed you. But I think he does deserve a bit of credit. I've seen him in a couple of team of the months as well online. I can't recall exactly which ones, but he's getting really good recognition for his performances over the last couple of weeks. And I think he's been an absolute man mountain in Borough's centre-back or back three, back two. And I think, you know, as much as it's good to have centre-backs who can pass the ball out and play it to feet and are good technically, I always love to see a centre-back that's just always in the right place at the right time, gets his head on absolutely everything, and sometimes just gets rid of the ball when we need to get rid of it. And I think he is that nice mix of someone who's not too bad on the ball, but he's also very no-nonsense, and he's not getting ahead to the praise and place or anything. But I think alongside that diving headed tackle, he does deserve immense credit for his performances of late. They've been brilliant.
I think he deserves it in general because, you know, he came back into the team. He was thrown back into the mix, wasn't he, against Leeds because Paddy McNair picked up an injury. And for him to have been out for as long as he was with that back injury, that was obviously incredibly troublesome for him, hence the amount of time that he was out on the sidelines. You know, he's been really good considering that. And I like Clark. And a point that you made there, Matt, about being good on the ball, a lot of Borough fans seem to have nervousness when he is on it. And I think I said last week that he turns really slowly like a reaver. But at the same time, like, I actually think he's pretty good on the ball, and he's had a reputation. He's garnered a reputation over the years of being a good defender in possession. So yeah, props to Matt Clark. Real credit to him, because I can't imagine that being thrown back into the mix after such a lengthy injury would have been an easy process for him.
I just want to go back to a moment you mentioned right at the start there, Matt, Latilaf's header. For me, as soon as that went in, other than, you know, the absolute joy of celebrating the equaliser, that actually brought back some memories for me, and I don't know if it's the same for you guys. David Nugent's header against Hull in the in the promotion season.
What a moment.
I thought it was a very, very similar sort of header. Obviously, I think it was the same corner of the goal as well, but the control that he got on that header and the technique to guide that into out of the reach of the keeper and into the bottom corner, I just thought it was such a good header from Latilaf.
Yeah, I want to make a point about Lath as well. I thought this after the Southampton game, I think it was, I think he is a striker that works on instinct. He has to do things instinctively. I've noticed when he's running in behind 1v1 and he's got time to pick a spot, I have no faith that he's well, not faith, but not as much faith as I probably should that he's going to pick a corner and bury it. But we saw the snapshot volley against QPR that come out of nowhere. He just latched onto it, put it in the bottom corner. You know, a really quick header. I think he's a striker who works on instinct. I love that chaotic side to him, but I think if he can refine his composure in front of goal, I think his some of his finishes this season just on instinct have been fantastic. So that's certainly a positive, I think, from him from a striking and finishing point of view. He just needs a bit more composure.
Well, I want to talk about that, Elif, and the next question, because I've got a stat here. 46 games, his goals per match is good enough to score 22 goals this season over 46 games. Can we go into next season with confidence in him to be our main striker? Obviously, he's spent a lot of the season out injured. He's not been able to play the full 46, but if he did next season, do you guys think he could be relied upon as our main striker next season?
I think so. I quite like the attributes that he does have because he's, I wouldn't say he's well-rounded because he's not yet refined. He is or can be quite erratic, but I do like that he's got many different strings to his bow, that he's got one hell of a leap on him. For someone that is on the short side of a striker, of a centre-forward, like he can jump. He's very agile and we've seen him quite a few times this season out-muscle a centre-half. I think it might have been Kipre against West Brom that I remember in particular where he absolutely floored him. And Kipre is quite a big built centre-half as well. And Matt said it on the last pod that he did it against Blackburn, was it? So, he's decently strong as well and he's quick. And he does fashion chances for himself because of the movement that he has. So I quite like the attributes that he does have. And the guy in front of me at the match yesterday was saying, I want to see what he would be like with a full season under his belt. And I completely agree. I think that although he does miss chances, like the one-on-ones that Matt alluded to, I still think that he gets enough to probably score quite a few. And as you said there, the stat kind of backs it up. So yeah, I think we can rely on him next season. I still would like to see another striker come in just for depth and quality purposes. But I do think that we can rely on Lata Lath, and he's probably one to look out for from like a championship neutral that might be listening to this podcast and any gaffer players, managers. He's probably one to look out for.
Yeah, I totally agree. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd like to see him alongside. I think he'd play well off of another striker, especially. I liked him alongside Marcus Forss. I'd be more than happy to see that across a season, but I don't know if I have faith in Forss to stay fit either. I think we'd have to get quite fortunate to see both of them play the majority of the season. I think, you know, my opinion hasn't changed on the striking front. I definitely, like Dana, would rather have another striker in there for depth, because we've seen this season without Lath and Forss and maybe Coburn at times, you know, we've looked quite light with the likes of Stick and Silvera and Greenwood up front. So I think just for that added reassurance of the goals we need, absolutely. But I wouldn't be against him being the starter, and I don't think I would have said that a few months ago. So that's credit to his great form and what he's been able to do when he's been fit.
I think it has really started to click for him towards the end of the season, and I'm loving seeing this, because that is just reminding me that I've said from months ago that we were going to click as a team around now and finish about seventh. So if we finish seventh, I'm putting the lottery on. but Matt, I've got the next question for you. Obviously, an injury to Isaiah Jones gave a chance to Alex Gilbert in the Southampton game. 67 minutes of Championship football this season. He picks up an assist against Southampton. Why do you think he's not had that many minutes in a Borough shirt, even with the injuries we've had so far this season?
I can only think that Carrick's not quite fancied him. And I mean, to have the number of injuries we've had and for him to still not have a run in the team, I can only put it down to that. But I think we're at a point in the season now where I'd love to be seeing a lot more from Alex Gilbert in terms of how many minutes he's getting, because I still think he's a bit of an unknown. I still think we're not too sure how good he actually is. He's not had that run in the side yet. I mean, the ball he put in for Lath was brilliant. So I'd love to see him in the side. And I've kind of got this, I don't know, I just think with seven games to go now, or is it six? I think with the lone players, like let's assume that we're probably not going to get playoffs, and you know we've got six games or whatever to develop some of our own, give a couple of players a chance. I would much rather see Alex Gilbert given a chance in the team over a Sam Greenwood, who I still think is pretty ineffective across the hall. He's not going to be here next season, I dare say. He's not our player. So I think when you're looking at some of the players in the team, when there are injuries, I'd much rather see Gilbert be given a chance than Greenwood, for example, in the team at this stage of the season. I can only assume Carrick's not liked what he's seen or doesn't quite think he's ready. But I think we're at a point in the season where you may as well chuck him in and see what he can do. He, as I say, fantastic assist against Southampton. So I definitely think there's quality there. We just haven't had a chance to see it.
Fair points. On the subject of injuries, Riley McGree and Marcus Force both confirmed out for the season. Say out for the season sounds a bit dramatic for six games, but it does mean the Borough now have a full 11 out injured once again. You look over the course of the season as well, who hasn't been injured? We've tried to narrow it down in our group chat, and we think we have. Other than the January loanees and Finn Azaz, we think it's only Jamie Jones and Dan Barlasser who haven't been injured this season. So if we've got that wrong, if there's anyone else we've missed there, obviously feel free to comment in our video or tweet us or whatever and correct us there. But it does seem... Every other person in the team's being injured.
It's also the Asia Cup suspensions and being ineligible to face their parent club. So it's kind of, there's just been an absolute cluster of unavailability this season for multiple reasons. But yeah, unless Jamie Jones has got an injury, we just don't know, do we? Because obviously third choice goalkeeper, he could easily have been injured at some point this season. We just don't know about it. So I guess if we put a question mark over Jamie Jones, Dan Barlasser is the only one that hasn't been unavailable this season, which is absolutely outstanding. It's astonishing that that's been the case.
I have to start calling him Iron Man Dan Barlasser. But Matt, do you think the injury / unavailability problem that we've had has kind of derailed our season? Not even kind of, maybe completely derailed our season.
Yeah, I've never ever known anything like it. I know it's a more common theme in football that teams are getting a lot more injuries for whatever reason, but I've never seen anything like it at Borough. And I kind of feel for Michael Carrick in a sense, and I think it maybe takes away some credit to the job he's actually done to have us in the position we're in. At times he's been, you know, juggling literally his first 11 being out. I remember, I think, the Coventry game, and we had 14 senior players out that day on the bench. We literally had like Dyke Steele, Silvera, and maybe a goalkeeper as our only senior substitutes, which was just crazy. So it is, I guess, a bit of an annoying what if of, you know, what maybe could have been this season had we not had the injuries. I would love to know whether it was just down to bad luck. Part of me thinks we surely can do some improvements from a training, recovery, conditioning point of view. I'd like to think there's something we can do to improve it. If not, then we must have smashed 1,000 mirrors or something, or walked under a gazillion ladders this season, because it's just absolutely ridiculous. So it excites me in a weird sense to see what this Borough side would do fully fit across the season. And I do feel like we would have been well in the playoff mix had we had a full strength squad. But saying that, I do remember just before Christmas, when we were absolutely embroiled with loads of injuries, we actually played quite well. We played respectively quite well in that period. And it was when we started getting players back, ironically, in January, we absolutely went down the shitter in our form. So I don't know. But yeah, it's certainly had an effect on the season. It's a real shame that we've not been able to see the full potential of this squad.
Well, I'm going to ask this question to you both as kind of another open floor question. And people may say things that they're going to regret later. This isn't going to be like a pre-season predictions again, hopefully. But if Borough had a fully fit squad throughout the entire season, where do you think it ranks compared to the rest of the Championship? And where would you expect the fully fit Borough team to be in the league at this point?
I reckon about sixth. My mind was teetering between sixth and seventh, but when I think of the chasing playoff pack and Norwich, like, there's not a big gap in terms of quality. There isn't a huge difference there. Like, it's not as if Norwich are significantly better in sixth place than whoever is in, is it Coventry in seventh, I think, than they are in seventh. So I think sixth or seventh, but I'm going to say sixth. And I think Emmanuel Latelath is a big player in that, because as we've discussed, trending on 22 goals this season if he was to be available for the majority of it, averaging a goal every two games. Like, that is really good. And I know that Borough don't necessarily have the depth up front, but, you know, in this hypothetical situation, if everybody was fit and stayed fit, which would be a dream, rather delusional one, mind, but a dream, then I think he would be a big, big part of that, because ultimately Borough are or have been a creative side, and we've just kind of needed that player to kind of finish those chances off. And, like, don't get me wrong, Latte Latha, don't think he can hang your hat on him to convert most of his chances, but I think he would probably push us up from seventh to sixth if he was fit for the whole of the season. And if I think about Borough's team, fully fit midfield and defence, and then shot goalkeeper in there as well, that collective, I think, is good enough for sixth. And call me delusional, I'll fully accept it, but I think it's probably good enough to just be in front of that white line in sixth.
I'd agree with you, because I think, going back to your point about the league table, I think there's the top four, and then there's everyone else from about fifth down to, I don't know, probably about 18th in this league, and they'll probably get into the playoffs. But no, I feel like that top four is out of sight. But then there are inconsistencies in other teams, which could lead to, you know, if we were a little bit more consistent, we could have easily came sixth. This isn't me kind of contradicting what I said on the last podcast, where I said there's been teams that have played better than us and deserve the last two playoff places, because I still kind of stick by that. I think over the course of the season, we haven't done enough. And if we somehow get into the playoffs, if, like I said earlier, if everyone else loses on Saturday, we win, we're 3 points off. And it's like, do we start to get a little bit, not even excited, but, you know, actually talk about the possibility of the playoffs? If we were to get there, I'd first be wondering how we got there, and then kind of worrying, because I don't think with the amount of unavailability that we have that we're even equipped for the playoffs. You know, I think we'd play whoever's in third or fourth and get knocked out. And I kind of feel like that may be the case for the teams that finish fifth and sixth as well. But it does come down to consistency, and I feel like that is something that we haven't been able to get a lot of this season. And I think unavailability's had a massive amount to do with that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd say the top four have just been, well, in a different league. I've never seen a standard like it in the Championship. So I would go as far as to say, you know, there's no reason why we haven't got a better squad or as good as than West Brom or Norwich. I think it's just down to, as you say, unlucky with injuries and just us not being good enough at times and underperforming at home, I'd say. So, yeah, I think we'd have been in the mix, definitely.
We've got a podcast question in here a little bit early, but a podcast question in from Paul says, with Ayling topping our assist chart at the moment, does the number of injuries cover up the lack of creativity for this season? Dana, I'm going to come to you for this one.
Yeah, well, the point on lack of creativity, that's not something I agree with, because we're actually fifth for chances created in the league this season overall. That's up there with Leicester, Southampton, Leeds and Ipswich in that order as well. However, I did look into it, and within our five lowest XG figures, four of them have come within the last eight game weeks, so Stoke, Plymouth, QPR and Southampton. So maybe there's a case to be made for our attacking potential slightly dipping of late. But for me, the injuries don't cover it. They would go a way to explain it, in my opinion. Like, Isaiah Jones is a creative player. Riley McGree last season was second in the Borough squad for expected assists. We've got Finn Azaz, who, you know, he's created the ninth most big chances this season, albeit obviously a period of that was spent at Plymouth. And Dan Barlasa is creative. Some of the balls he was playing yesterday, really good. And don't forget, we had Morgan Rogers as well at a point this season. I know he's no longer here, but he was at one point. So Borough have been this season a creative side. I just think, and assists aren't really a good measure of creativity anyway, because you can play a 5-yard ball to somebody that smacks one in from 30 yards, top bins. Does that mean that assister is creative? It's just a simple square ball. So, yeah, I think Borough are a creative side. Slight dip of late, potentially, but I think the injuries have taken away creative players, and it's really not a surprise then that maybe of late Borough have slightly declined in terms of our creative output.
Someone you didn't mention in your list there who might have been a little bit creative was Matt Crooks, scored a few goals this season, and we interviewed him like a month ago, so if anyone hasn't listened to that yet, go back and listen to it because it was a great interview.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Now we're going to talk about Sheffield Wednesday. Borough won 2-0 yesterday thanks to an own goal. And are we calling it an Isaiah Jones goal? It was going in, so...
Yeah, whatever. We'll give it to Jones.
Yeah, they scored, helping Borough get the 3 points. Matt, how would you assess the game yesterday?
I think first half it was not the same old. I thought we were better in possession, but we still lacked that little bit of quality. I think in the final third, we didn't really create or test the goalkeeper as much as I think we should have done. And I wouldn't say we were performing as poorly as we have done at home, but it was kind of a similar sort of theme against a team near the bottom where we just weren't quite putting them to the sword. And the longer the game goes on, the more you worry that we were going to get that sort of sucker blow. But getting the first goal was massive when we got it in the first half, because absolutely 100% Sheffield Wednesday were poor. They were really, really poor. And it sounds like from their end of things, it was probably one of their worst performances under Danny Rowell. He was especially frustrated after the game yesterday. But I think just seeing us get that first goal when we did forced them to come out, and the game opened up even more second half. And I thought we improved quite a lot in the second half. And I think it's the most I've seen us in terms of most creative I've seen us at home for a long time in terms of the chances we were creating. We were carving them open quite easily. We had quite a few shots on goal. A strange caveat was that's the first home win I've seen at the Riverside in the flesh since we beat Chelsea. and it was actually the first league win I've seen Borough have in person since we beat West Brom. So I was thoroughly, thoroughly happy with that. But yeah, it was good to just see us put them to the sword. And we should have had another couple of penalties as well. So really, on another day, if Borough had have been 100% clinical and the referee hadn't have been a little bit of a idiot, we might have had 3 or 4. That's if they'd have took the ball off Sam Greenwood and didn't let him take the penalties. But yeah, it was a good performance. And I was just really, really happy just to see us play a side who we should be beating at home, drama-free, comfortable, clean sheet, happy days.
I think you need to calm down with some of the ref abuse there, Mas.
coming from you. Okay. What was your thoughts on the referee's performance yesterday, Tom?
Yeah, please let us know.
Come on, Tom.
You don't want to know my thoughts on the referee yesterday. To be fair, I just thought he was bad, and I thought he was bad for both teams. Like, there were some decisions where I was left scratching my head, and it was even decisions that went for us. I was like, what's he giving that for? Yeah, I did think he can't. There was actually a point that I pointed out to my dad when it happened. I can't remember who it was who got subbed off. I think it might have been Azaz, but the ref told him to go off at the nearest touchline, and he turned away, started walking towards the tunnels and taking the long way across the pitch, and he was just kind of like, yeah, that's fine. I was like, he had no control over that game.
Didn't a Sheffield Wednesday player do that as well? Or am I thinking of a completely different game? Yeah, we were all saying around us, aren't they supposed to go off at the nearest, like, take the nearest exit, mate? But he went the whole way. I was like, okay. It's kind of inconsequential, I guess, but, like, the rules are the rules, right?
But yeah, whatever. Like, I think it was already 2-0 at that point, and we were all just kind of like, it doesn't make a difference, but still, like, it does show that they're just ignoring the ref, really, and doing what they want, but then he's done nothing about it. But anyway, in terms of Borough and not the referee, Dana, would you say that is the most complete performance at home for a while?
It's a difficult question, this one, because I think we're etching into football cliches territory, because for me, like, the most complete performance, the barometer of that is, like, Brighton away under Karanka. Like, that was pure complete performance, and away from home as well. So I think, relative to where Borough are right now, yes, maybe. I think it's the closest that we've kind of come to that, which is good, you know, because we've not had particularly great fortunes at home, which is part of the reason why we've obviously struggled to get ourselves into that top six and really firm up a promotion charge or a playoff charge. So it's good to know that we can win at home, and we can win at home against a team that I think many would have maybe thought we could potentially slip up against, because our record against the teams around Sheffield Wednesday, including Sheffield Wednesday, it's not been great this season. So complete, maybe the closest, yeah, but complete or not, I think it was good to see Borough win at the Riverside.
I suppose in comparison to some of the performances that we've seen at home, it probably would have to be the most complete, but then it's a low bar and there's no real competition for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Danny Rawls said it should have been a lot more. Do you both think it could be a classic case of Borough's season of not finishing our chances created? Apparently we're second for biggest chances missed.
Yeah, we do love a missed chance, don't we? I mean, I looked at the stats after that game. Borough had 23 shots, which may inflate how you kind of view the game if you look purely on stats, if you're just an alien that's been plopped on and said, yeah, go on, look at who scored and see what that game was like. 11 of them were outside the box, though. So out of the 12 in penalty area shots that we had, there was one that I thought was a gilt-edged chance, which was Jones's shot from Greenwood's cross. I thought it was a lovely cross. It was fizzed across the face of goal, but it bubbles up at probably the worst time for Jones as he goes to hit it. So I don't think that helps. I mean, would he have scored anyway? Probably not. It's Isaiah Jones. He's not exactly renowned for finishing his chances. But there was also a Laelath chance that I don't think he should have scored from, but I think he should have hit the target. Azaz releases him with the ball threaded through between the two centre-halves. And Laelath, he takes a touch with, like, the instep of his right foot, and it takes him wide. Instead of taking it towards the goalkeeper, it kind of takes him away from it, and it ends up with Sheffield Wednesday's defender for Mewo. It gives him the chance to kind of come across, narrow the angle, and maybe to a degree put Laelath on and off even, and then he blazes it over the bar. But I agree with you guys. I'm going to weigh in on the referee here, because we should have had two penalties on top of the one that we already had. There was a clear foul. O'Brien gets absolutely wiped out. It's a really good, potentially a really good corner routine where he kind of peels around the back and it's connected by the pass from the corner, and he gets absolutely wiped out by, I think it might have been Ehekwe, I think it was. And then Marvin Johnson blocks the ball with his hand from Zaire Jones's shot, and it's like the most unnatural position you will ever see. He literally blocks it with his hand. How both of those were not penalties, I don't know. I mean, we don't really care in the end, because it didn't cost, like, the referees' non-decisions didn't cost us the game. But, like, how did Matt Donoghue not see those? And then in the end, with the penalty that we did get, it took him about 3 working installments to actually see that Barry Bannon had very clearly handled the ball. So it's like, yeah, if you add that onto, I mean, there's no guarantee that whoever's going to take the penalty, be it Greenwood, be it Azaz, be it you two, Lailaf, whoever, that it's going to be converted. But it gives us a bloody good opportunity to add goals to the scoreline. So, yeah, maybe from that point of view, Danny Roll is, maybe that's what he was thinking of. I don't know. But, yeah, should have had two absolute stonewall penalties.
On that point about the ref, because of where I was sat, I didn't see the handball for the penalty that was given properly. He was facing away from me. And then, obviously, you mentioned the ref took 3 working days to give that decision. Apparently, no one appealed it other than the fans.
And, yeah, that was weird.
He just kind of pointed it at the spot, and I was just like, okay. But I thought that was, at the time, I was like, he hasn't given a penalty for the other two, but he's given a penalty for that. I was like, I felt like that was harsh. And then I've watched it back since. I was like, yeah, okay, it was handball. But
what's Bannon doing, by the way? Like,
no idea.
He's waving to someone in the north, I think, isn't he?
I think you saw Rory.
The ref did take ages. I thought afterwards, has he thought, oh, I've fumbled 2 decisions here. I need to, you know, I know this is a complete conspiracy of when, you know, do refs give decisions based off of previous ones they've missed? But I don't know. Did he look at the previous 2 that he's fumbled and thought, oh, Christ, you know, if I have a chance to give them a penalty here, I will? Because Bannon, like, high-fived the ball pretty much out the box. The referee just stood around, looked around for a bit, then pointed to the spot. It was really weird, wasn't it? But
honestly, we missed anyway. If Bannon had some red paint on his hands, that ball would look like Wilson from Castaway after our penalty was given.
Full on volleyballed it, didn't he?
Aye. But on the penalty, bit of a talking point. Lailaf wanted to take it. Greenwood told him, no, I've got the ball. It's my ball. I'm taking it home and taking the penalty myself. Do you both think Lailaf should have taken the penalty instead of Greenwood? I suppose it's easier to say in hindsight that, you know, he should have. But I think for me personally, watching that take place, I was like, you're taking the ball off the striker. He has taken penalties for us earlier this season and scored them. I don't think you should be doing that, but I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on it.
I'd like to think there is a pre-assigned penalty taker in the dressing room before the game, so this issue is just not even a thing, because it just makes Sam Greenwood look like a bit of a wally, doesn't it? I mean, it happened in the Leeds game as well. I think Somerville took the ball for them. Pirro was literally trying to wrestle it from him. And it would have looked really, really bad on him had he missed. And you just don't want to see players squabbling over a football. So for me, I'm not too bothered who takes it, as long as whoever is the assigned penalty taker is given the ball. And then if they score, they score. If they miss, they miss. But Lath was the only one who appeared to want the ball. So that makes me think he was the pre-assigned penalty taker. And Greenwood just wasn't having any of it. So maybe it was karma for Lath that he went and hit the post. I don't know, but it's just not something you're like, I just don't like seeing that. I don't know why. I just don't like seeing players fighting over the ball. I feel like there should just be a decision made there and they just get on with it.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd want them all on the same page, really. And I've also of the opinion that it should be pre-assigned. Dana, what's your opinion on it?
I was just sort of silent there because my opinion, honestly, is that I don't care. Like, we don't know who Borough's assigned penalty taker is. We could kind of maybe take a guess that it's Lailaf purely just based on the fact that he's the striker. But, like, it's kind of like, whatever. We won the game in the end. If it was 1-1, 0-0, or, I don't know, 0-0 and then Sheffield Wednesday go and score after this, then it would be far bigger a talking point than I feel like it should be. I just think it's a bit of a storm in a teacup. I know that we don't really want to see, and I laughed at Matt saying squabble over a football because that's quite funny. But, like, yeah, you ideally don't want to see it. But, like, I look back at it on my scout, and Greenwood does look over to the touchline, so I don't know if he gets, like, an approving nod from Carrick or whatever. Like, we just don't know. So my opinion, honestly, is that I don't care. He missed it. Penalty takers miss. Grant missed a few, didn't he? But he scored more than he missed. It's just, it can happen. So I'm not that bothered at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think it's not that big of an issue after we've won 2-0 very impressively as well. So speaking of impressively, we're now going to go to the praise and place. Ah, yes, the praise and place where we can give praise to anything. And I'm going to have to think on the spot of what we can give praise to. Mine and Dana's Borough shirts, Matt's Borough shirt hanging up in the background there because he didn't get the secret memo that we were wearing Borough shirts for this one. Could be anything.
You didn't get Dana, the Borough breakdown memo, actually. Hey,
that's a good
shocking
one.
Shocking from us.
No, yeah. It really is, not representing the brand. Dana, I'm going to come to you first. Who is in your praise and place for Borough over the Easter weekend?
Well, I've got to put Matt Clark in there for that absolute defensive masterclass in a moment against Southampton. I also want to mention Senny Dieng in that game because I think he made some big saves that were pretty important. I think actually he had a pretty mixed game overall. He did spill a couple, did parry a few in danger, but ultimately he made some big saves. I also want to mention Dan Barlasser, and I have to do this because he is the whipping boy, the boo boy. And I think that a lot of Borough fans, too many Borough fans, in my opinion, have kind of made their mind up about Dan Barlasser. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's been good when he's not been, because I think he has struggled, particularly when teams press him, and we've discussed this before, but I thought he was really good against Sheffield Wednesday. And I think because of the amount of stick that he's been getting, I did think during the game, he's been good here. But should I be thinking that? Because he's shite, isn't he? But actually, no, he's a good player and he played well against Sheffield Wednesday. So he deserves his credit. So I'm going to give him it in the praise of place. So yeah, I want to really spotlight Dan Barlasser this week because I think he deserves it for that performance.
I completely agree that he deserves it. Matt, who's in your praise and place this week?
I will agree with Barlasser as well. I thought he was fantastic, as was O'Brien yesterday. I think he covered every blade of grass. He was absolutely everywhere. One of his best performances as well. I would give some praise to Matt Clark. I think we've mentioned already how good he's been. Senny Dieng lives in my prison place. He has permanent residence there, so that goes without saying. I think Lath as well. I would like to have seen him got on the score sheet against Sheffield Wednesday, but I thought, you know, his performance and the goal he got against Southampton was good. But I do want to mention Mr. Reliable, Johnny Howson, because I just, when I was watching the game yesterday and I was seeing how we were defending, and I just thought he's a 36-year-old central midfielder. He's playing in centre-back. It doesn't matter if it's a back three or back two. He just looks at home wherever he plays. He can play absolutely anywhere. And most of the time, he'll drop a 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10. And I just think, I just really want to just recognise how good Johnny Howson is while he's here. And I hope he still continues to be here because just his ability to slot into any part of the team at his age and still perform at such a brilliantly consistent standard is just amazing. So he deserves credit as well.
He doesn't show any signs of aging. He's just as young as he ever was. I think for my praise and place this week, I want to give praise to someone who's not been mentioned here, but I think does deserve a little bit, and it's Finn Azaz. I thought yesterday in the game against Chef Wed, he was showing a lot more glimpses of what I thought we were signing from Plymouth. Obviously, players take, you know, however long it takes them to bed in. He's had some all right games, some good games, and some not so good games. He's not been that consistent since he came in, but I don't really hold that against him because I think he can see the potential that's there. Yesterday, he looked a lot more like the player who played against us for Plymouth. And if we can get that from him a lot more and have him, you know, a lot more consistent, I think he's going to be one I really enjoy watching in this team. And I don't want to necessarily give this player like praise in place type status, but I feel like I have to mention it because of the amount I slated him before for one of his performances. But Luke Thomas wasn't that bad yesterday. I've got to give him a bit of credit. I thought he did okay. And that is saying a lot considering he looked like Bambi on ice last time he was playing and couldn't stay on his feet. So, yeah, it was a low bar, but he has cleared it. And hopefully now, if he does get more chances, he can continue to clear that bar.
I just want to mention someone a bit like Thomas who's kind of come under criticism. And I know we spoke about him there in regards to the penalty incident. But Sam Greenwood, I thought, was good in that second half, in particular yesterday. So credit where credit's due. I think he has largely been ineffective at Borough in terms of his general performances. But I did think that yesterday it was better. And that's all we want to see from players, isn't it? We just want to see them build. We want to see them progress and we want to see them improve. And in the case of Greenwood, in the case of Thomas, I guess, in the case of Barlasser and Finnazaz, who I think has been building as well, there's four players there that have improved. So, yeah. Praise of place mentions for those guys.
Yeah, I think it should be noted with those players that as Borough fans, we should always want our players to do well. And I know there was a lot of talk on BBC TV yesterday about the kind of like agenda against Barlasser that a lot of fans have made their mind up. And it's like, you should be able to admit when a player has had a good game and give, if you're going to slate them, you're going to give them credit when they have a good game. And I feel like, you know, Barlasser, Greenwood, Thomas to an extent, they all had all right games yesterday, so, like in Barlasser's case, better than all right. So it needs to be noted. But now that I shocked everyone with that Luke Thomas mentioning the praise and place, let's move on to podcast questions. Going to dive straight into this one, and this is a question for you both, and it is sent in by Freddie. He said, do we buy Greenwood for the rumoured 1.5 million or let him go? He played well yesterday, but he hasn't been the greatest for about 10 games before that. Matt, I'll come to you first.
No, I don't think we sign Sam Greenwood. I will agree, I think he was much more effective yesterday than what he has been, but that was the first notable performance from him in what I feel has been a very, very long time. I think he come into the side, he started really well. I remember the goal against Sunderland, the free kick against Leicester. Obviously, he's gave us some pretty big moments and highlights, I would say. But I think consistently across the board, I don't think he's warranted a place in Borough's side next season. I think we can buy equally just as good, if not better, for 1.5 million. And his wages have to come into conversation because I believe if Leeds get promoted, he might be on a wage increase if his wages aren't already too high. So, yeah, I don't think he warrants, for both his on-pitch performances across the season and for what his wages are reported to be if Leeds go up next season, which they maybe probably will.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, Dana. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, didn't Kieran Scott say that, yeah, there's a wage increase? I think that Leeds will go up. Obviously, it seems like it's likely. So I don't think that I can't see it happening firstly. And I also don't think that it would necessarily be, I don't want to say smart business, but I can't think of anything else. So I'm just going to say smart business. I know he's a young player, but for 1.5 million, I do agree with Matt. I do feel as though we could potentially get better.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement on that one. Dana, I'm going to come to you for the next question. It's from Gokul. He says, reasons behind the complete upturn in form and clean sheets?
I guess it's kind of difficult to land on an answer because, I mean, I hate to be that person, but I do think we have to acknowledge the teams that we have faced in this run. With Norwich and Southampton aside, I will mention them, though, because I'm just about to read out the list of teams. So Norwich, QPR, Birmingham, Blackburn, Southampton and Sheffield Wednesday. In the case of Sheffield Wednesday and Birmingham, absolutely terrible. I couldn't watch the QPR game because my laptop was broke, so you guys might have to help me out with that one. But Blackburn, I mean, Norwich. We'll start with Norwich, actually, with this, because Borough, they switched to the back three in that match and it did not work at the beginning because Borough's performance was really poor in that opening, what was it, 20 minutes, 25 minutes or whatever it was before Sainz got sent off. And that sending off was never in a million years a red card. So that was a massive, almost a sliding doors moment really. But that moment in that game positively impacted Borough's performance because Norwich, their performance after that, their reaction to that red card was really poor. But I think it just allowed Borough to use that man advantage to their favour. And then obviously we ended up winning that game. And then against Southampton, you cannot get away from what we mentioned, the amount of chances that Southampton spurned. Now, I do think Borough were good value in the end for a point, but like it should have been massively out of sight. So I think Borough have been on the receiving end of good fortune, but alongside that, I can't not mention Marcus Forster's injury against Blackburn, because that did change the kind of tide away from Borough in that game and negatively impacted our performance. So it's difficult to kind of say. I guess my overarching view of it is that we have played some pretty decent teams in regards to their placement, and that maybe this was kind of expected, in the same way that I think we're coming up against Ipswich and Leeds soon. I'm not expecting us to get anything from those games. Maybe this whole record of Borough performing poorly against the lower sides in this division has kind of reverted back to its expectancy, and we're kind of seeing nature heal in a way. So, yeah, I guess we'll kind of see where Borough go from here, starting with mid-table Swansea, which could be tricky for us because it would be very typical of Borough to not win that game, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been typical of Borough to not beat Sheffield Wednesday and,
true,
you know, pick something up against Southampton. We've managed to clear the typical Borough for Easter weekend. Can we do it next weekend? Last question is from Ted, and I'm going to come to you both for this one. Ted says, how many players realistically do we need to sign in the summer to push for playoffs next year? This could be push for playoffs or automatic promotion, if that's what we'd like to see next year. Dana, I'm going to come to you first on this one.
I've gone for a striker, a left winger, a right back, a central midfielder, and attacking midfielder. Looking at our depth, I'd obviously like to see a striker. We've needed one since the summer. I would like to see us sign a left winger, because I think besides Riley McGree, I just don't think the quality's there with the depth. Right back, Anthony Dykstra's out of contract. Can't see him being signed on. Is Tommy Smith out of contract as well?
I think Tommy Smith's got a year left.
Right, okay. I imagine that he would stay on then, but we still need an extra option at right back. I know Rav can play there, but he's probably viewed as a centre-half, I would assume. Central midfielder, because we might lose Hackney, but also I'd quite like that central midfielder to be O'Brien, to be honest, and then an attacking midfielder, because I know we've got Finn Azaz. I know that maybe Riley McGree can play in that number 10 position, but losing Rodgers was quite big. And I think that we need added depth and added quality there as well. So, yeah. Five positions there for me.
How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same, to be honest. I sort of had right back, left wing, 10, striker, and a central midfielder. I think we might need a bit of an overhaul in there if Hackney leaves. For me, I just want to see us sign quality. I think we are not going to need the overhaul that we needed last season, because we've not left ourselves over-reliant on loans, which has been a positive of the recruitment this season. So I think we've got a better platform to build on from this point going into next season. So I think we're in a position, hopefully financially as well as, you know, squad-wise, where we can actually sign more quality than quantity, if that makes sense. We're not having to sign 10, 12 players to replace four or five loans, as well as add to other positions. Hopefully we can just look at certain areas and say, right, we've got the quantity across most of the team, now let's add the quality to certain areas. And if we can add four quality players to this starting 11 with the current crop of players we've already got, I think that will put us in a fantastic position to challenge for at least the playoffs next season. So as long as we sign quality, I'd be happy with four or five players at least.
I am really looking forward, but also a bit nervous for the summer. I really want us to do something and kind of go for it. I get the model that we've gone with this year, and I think that we have had players come through the door who have developed and will be first teamers next season. But then I'm also thinking, can we get those little bits of quality that we need in terms of, you know, established championship players, if we can? Or obviously there is the model that we're going to need to do it on lower wages, but if we can bring quality players through the door and really have a go of it next season, just so it's entertaining to watch and we don't end up with what we've had this season, especially at home. But before we get to the summer, we've got six games left and going to be looking ahead to Swansea now. Only slightly, though, we will be having an opposition preview show with Luke from Swanscast later in the week. But Dana, you've got a little bit on Swansea for this episode.
Yeah, they're very mid-table at the moment, Swansea. Their last 10 games, they've won 4, drawn 2 and lost 4. I just had to really struggle to say that there because I was working out whether that was in fact 10 games, but it was, so we're all good. But yeah, the fans are quite frustrated at the style of play under Luke Williams. I looked at jackarmy.net, which is one of the Swansea forums, and Swansea fan Phil Sumbler says this: "We can talk about a Matt Grimes free kick that crashed back off the crossbar or a Gouveia cross that came back off the post, but the reality is we were served up another performance where a large part of the game was played at walking pace and more than a fair share of the game was spent with the back line, which stretches as far as our midfield, playing about with the ball in our own half, often standing on the ball to slow it down even more, just in case there was ever any danger of us reaching as high as second gear." I think this is also of interest to Borough fans because he ends up saying further on in that piece that Nathan Wood remains a disaster waiting to happen in the back line. So I think they're a bit disillusioned at the moment. They're on the beach and they're probably looking towards next season. So a bit of a tricky game for them potentially just because their fans just seem to be a little bit checked out.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I remember Luke Williams playing for us under Gordon Strachan. And look at him now.
For God's sake.
Going to move on to predictions for the game after my shit crack there. Dana, I'm going to start with you first.
I'm going to go with 2-0 Borough for this one. I can't see them scoring, but that means they probably will, because I've cursed us. But yeah, 2-0, keep the good run going, keep the clean sheets going, and hopefully everyone around us falls. I'm praying for their downfall just because I think it'd be funny, and also it would open up the potential for Canberra again to the playoffs. Mark 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever we're on.
Matt?
I'm going to snap on that. I was going to say 2-0, and I'll go Latte Laugh to get a brace as well. Why not?
I think for my prediction, I'm going to go 4-0. I'm going to go a bit out there. I'm in hospitality.
To be fair, it's that part of the season.
Yeah, I'm in hospitality for this game, and I'm just thinking what would go best with all the free drink and free food, and it would be a 4-0 win. I think the last time I was in hospitality was against Reading last season. I think that was 5-0, wasn't it? So, yeah, let's hope that run continues. But that is it for today. Thanks very much for joining me, guys, and for all the listeners and viewers for tuning in. This has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your matchday chatter in a pod. Up the Borough Breakdown.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.